Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to start the sermon by reading, and you don't need to turn there necessarily, from Isaiah 65, and a couple of verses there, verse 21 and 22. And this is talking about a time of in the future when things are going to be good. That's not the subject of the sermon, but I just want to point out one thing. It says, they shall build houses and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them, and they shall not build and another inhabit, and they shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are as the days of my people, and mine elect shall long enjoy the work of their hands. So as Isaiah is painting a picture of a particular time in the future when things are going to be peaceful and secure, he includes a picture in his mind's eye, and it's written down here, of a vineyard. So, and we could turn to other places. I'll turn to Micah chapter 4. And verses 1 and 4, and we're familiar with this from the Feast of Tabernacles. And it talks about how in the days will come to pass that in the mountain of the house of the Lord will be established above all the mountains. So the God's government will be in charge, and many nations will come and be taught the way of God and so forth, and judge among many people and beat swords into plowshares and spears into pruning hooks and so forth. Not going to learn war anymore. And you get to verse 4, it says, then they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none will make them afraid, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. So what's the point of that? What's the point of it back in Isaiah? Is the point that no matter who you are and whether you like wine or grapes or figs or whatever, that you're going to have a fig tree and you're going to sit under it? No, I don't think that's the point. The point is that this is a mental picture and something that resonated with the people at that time, that this is an indication of security. If you have time to sit under your fig tree and relax there, if you have time to build a vineyard and enjoy the crop, then it's a time of peace, number one. It's a time of security. It's a time that it's a good time. It's a good time. And we can see that at various places in the Bible, and I don't need to turn to any more. I am going to turn to one more, though. I've got one more here that I want to turn to, and that's in 1 Kings. To establish here that this is a symbol. It's a symbol that the Bible uses. I'll read 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 25. It says, Judah and Israel dwelt safely. This is after Solomon's reign began. Judah and Israel dwelt safely, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, from Dan even to Beersheba, from the north all the way to the south, all the days of Solomon. What's that mean? Does that mean that everybody had a fig tree and everybody had a vine? No, not necessarily. What it meant was there was security and peace, and people had a peaceful reign. There was prosperity. And part of that word picture there involved vineyards and fig trees and sitting, you know, being able to sit underneath of them and have the security to do that. And so it is that in the Bible, a vine is associated with prosperity. And we can learn a lot from vines. I'll mention this right now. I really maybe should mention it later. But the reality was it was a lot of work involved in creating a vineyard. And you couldn't do that and receive the fruit of it just because you decide to put in a couple of weeks. You've got a couple of good weeks and you're going to do this. It took time. It took time. So because there was an investment of time and money, and it took a certain amount of security to accomplish that, a vineyard became a symbol for a period of peace and prosperity and security. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Why do I want to make that point? That's because today we're going to spend most of the time talking about talking about an analogy that's in John 15. And this is something that you're familiar with, you've heard before. I'm not going to have cover any new territory here. And I've used a lot of these images before in messages that you've heard. But I think it's good to review this every once in a while, because in the real world, where you live and where I live, this section of Scripture rings true again and again and again. And sometimes it rings true in a way that's unpleasant. And that's why I think it's good to think about this rather frequently and to review it frequently because, again, in the reality of our lives, it's not always as peaceful as we want, and we have different things that we experience. And John 15 gives us some insight into how to do that. I will read the whole thing in a minute, but just to start in chapter 15, verse 1, I'm sorry. Jesus said, and he said, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman." Now, this is the King James. The husband, the person who takes care of the land. Skip down to verse 5. Again, he says, "I am the vine, and you are the branches. He who abides in me, and I in him, the same brings forth much fruit, for without me you can do nothing." So we have this picture of a vine, of a husbandman that tends to the vine, and of branches that are part of the vine. And that's the analogy. And we'll be back into, if you happen to turn to John 15, you might want to put something there because we're going to go other places, but we're going to always come back to John 15 during the sermon. What we'll do today is study John 15, see what we can learn and understand about growth and correction even from a study of the pruning of the vine. And if you want a title, you can call this spiritual pruning. I'm going to talk about pruning. And if you can just imagine for a second that you're a plant and you have some feelings, you think, well, I wouldn't like to be pruned, would you? You know, it doesn't hurt us usually to cut a fingernail, you know, that part, or to have our hair cut, or something like that. But, you know, if somebody said, well, we need to cut one of your fingers off just a little bit, or something like that, you know, so I got this image in my mind, unfortunately, of a movie that the kids were watching this week that had to do with plants becoming animals. Does that make sense? You ever heard Cloudy with a Chance of, Meatballs? Yeah. Some goofy movie. But anyway, there's somehow or another in this futuristic society, this food developed, and things that are not supposed to be animate are. They're alive in a different way. Anyway, strange. So, plants with feelings. You have to get the idea. These plants are kind of like animals in the movie. But, you know, you can imagine that being cut, having a few leaves cut off, or having a branch cut off would be very unpleasant if you were a plant and you had feelings. Well, that's the analogy, though. That's the analogy that Jesus uses here in John chapter 15. And we're going to look at that in more detail today. And hopefully it'll be a review for us, but also maybe to refocus our minds on sometimes why things happen that we are not crazy about, at least speaking for myself. So we have an analogy that Jesus introduces, and I'm going to read through it. Again, you're totally familiar with this. "I am the true vine, my Father's the husbandman. Every branch in me that bears not fruit," doesn't bear fruit, "he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he purges it," or prunes it, "that he may bring forth more fruit." Now you are clean through the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine, no more can you, except you abide in me. I am the vine, and you are the branches. As I read before, he that abides in me, and I in him, the same brings forth much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. If a man abide not in me, he's cast forth as a branch, and he's withered. And men gather from them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. But if you abide in me, and my words abide in you, you shall ask what you will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit. So shall you be my disciples." You've heard that, you know, a lot of times in your church career. You've read that a lot of times in your Bible study. And so have I. But we're going to go through it one more time. And hopefully it'll be timely for each of us. And there's certain details, some of which I've mentioned before here, I'm sure. Maybe you've heard some of them, maybe you haven't. But let's look at the basic spiritual and physical analogy here. There's an analogy of something physical, a grapevine. And Jesus is using that physical thing to explain a spiritual concept. So let's look at, first of all, the physical components here and see what we can learn about that, and see and make sure we have the picture accurate. And it has various components. The first thing is that Jesus says that he's the vine, right? I'm going to write some of these down. Now, I may have mentioned this before. Maybe you were here, maybe you weren't. But, you know, when I'm a kid, I think of a vine. I think of Tarzan swinging on something through the jungle, right? When I moved up to Pennsylvania and owned many acres of woods, I had these vines. And they went up 40, 50, 60 feet in these poplar trees and were all tangled in the top of the poplar trees. I don't know what they were, some kind of grapes or fox grapes. Yeah, huge. And you could swing if you wanted to. You could swing from these things. They're big, big, thick vines. But that's my idea of what a vine is. And we had grapes growing up. Some of you have grapes on your property. You have grapes? And your grapes are how old, approximately, your vines?
50 years.
50?
Hers is 50. Mine's probably about
25. 25, okay.
They last forever, not
the bits. How big is the bottom of your vines? Okay, about like that. That's good. 50 years old. I grew up and we had some grapes in the backyard, but they were fairly new. So the vines that our grapes grew on kind of looked like these fox grape vines that I had. You know, they were just long and spindly. And some years back, we had a chance to go to Italy. Now, yes, you can imagine they have some grape vines in Italy that have some years to them. And that's when I learned something that you already know from your vines, and that is that the vines I had you grew up with a kid, they were just these things, you know, like this. They're kind of spindly. I shouldn't even draw them like that. They were skinny. When I went to Italy, they had these things that were massive. And it had a trunk. And then, you know, it had these branches that came off from it. But it had a massive base to it. That surprised me. It surprised me. And what I learned from that was that Jesus, when he said, I am the vine, he was saying, he's the trunk. He's that base, that thing that's big around in your 50-year-old ones or even bigger around in the older ones. Now, I don't know how long a grape is good for, you know, how big it can get. I'm not saying that these vines in Italy were 2,000 years old. I'm sure they weren't, but they were old. And then we got to visit France, the same thing, later on. Jesus is saying, he's this. He's not the skinny honeysuckle vine that grows up, you know, outside your house somewhere. He's not some skinny little vine, or he's not even the fox grape vine that's entangled in the poplar tree back at our former property in Pennsylvania. Now, he's saying he's this. He's the trunk of this plant. And so that's the first thing we have to realize, is that when Jesus is describing himself, he's not describing himself some spindly little thing that kind of winds in and out and grabs on, you know, sends these little things like a morning glory and hooks onto the branch of this or hooks onto the fence or whatever. He's not describing himself as that. He's describing himself as a trunk of a tree. In this case, it's a grape tree, if I want to put it that way. And that's what he is. And if I can turn back to John chapter 6. John 6, and I'll read in verse 38, begin in verse 38. For I came down from heaven, not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will, which has sent me, that of all that he's given me, I should lose nothing but raise it again on the last day. And it will be the will of him that sent me, that everyone which sees the Son, which believes in him, may have everlasting life, and I'll raise him up at the last day. Jesus is saying, in John 15, he says he's a trunk. But now he's saying he does only what the Father does. And that's, you know, that's where he's receiving his power. So what does a trunk do? It does a lot of things. But one of the things it does is it's a conduit for water, nutrients from the ground. And Jesus is, in a sense, he's fulfilling that role. He's not just a foundation, and he is a foundation, but he is a conduit for things from his Father in a way. And he makes that point in John chapter 6, and also in John chapter 5, If you want to write another verse down. John 5, verse 19, he says, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself but what he sees the Father do. So, again, he's deferring to the Father, but he's saying, the power comes from his Father. And as a trunk, he's there, he's a foundation, he's solid, but he's also a conduit for what God provides that gets to the branches. That's a pretty lame picture there, sorry. I'll get something a little more detailed here in a minute. In John 7, and you can write down, there's a lot of them here in John. John 7, chapter 37, oh, sorry, verse 37. And 38 and 39. In the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, if any man thirst, let him come to me and drink. And he that believes on me, the scripture said, out of his belly shall flow the rivers of living water. And he spoke this of the Spirit, which they that believe on him shall receive, because the Holy Spirit had not yet been given. So, we have, maybe I should make it green, right? We have a trunk of sorts, and through that trunk, we have water, which is a picture of the Holy Spirit. This is a picture of Jesus. And then, off from this, you have branches. So Jesus, in spite of the fact that he had come from the Father and was going back to the Father, and he was given all kinds of sermons on the roles and functions of Jesus and those types of things, but when he talks about himself, at least in this case, he makes a very humble comparison between himself and a trunk of a grapevine that's just basically there to, he doesn't say to provide support, but it does, but to pass on the nutrients to the branches. Very humble comparison. In 1 Corinthians, I'm going to go to chapter 3, 1 Corinthians 3. I'll try to keep marking John 15, since it's going to come back so many times. 1 Corinthians 3, and could read a lot of verses, but I'll read verse 6 to start with. And he talks about that he had planted, he'd begun planted the seeds for the church. There in Corinth, Apollos watered, God gave the increase. So Paul's making an analogy now that the church is represented by a plant. A plant, and he's talking about the different functions, who did what, which is not important to me right now. In verse 9. For we are laborers together with God. You are God's husbandry. You are God's building. And that's a whole different angle we could take. We're talking about a foundation. That could be another topic that we're going to talk about grapes today and not about buildings, but it's the same thing. Jesus is the foundation. The foundation of the grapevine is down here where the trunk is. The foundation of a building is what we call foundation in English, so it applies both ways. In verse 10, according to the grace of God which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, another man builds thereon. So, Jesus is the foundation. In this case, in John 15, though, the foundation is a trunk. It's a trunk of a living plant, and it provides the support. And the church is Christ's body. And we know that from other things. I could turn to several verses. I think I'll just turn to one and read it right now. That's Jeremiah. I'll turn to Jeremiah 2 and verse 21. Could turn to other ones. And I'm breaking the thought here. Yet I have planted you a noble vine, holy a right seed. But then how then are you turned into a degenerate plant and a strange vine unto me? This is an example where Judah, sometimes there are examples of Judah and Israel, and they are also symbolic of the church in other verses, where the Bible compares us, that is, the church or Israel in the Old Testament, to a vine that God tends to and that God has planted and takes care of. You could also add to the fact that a vine, your vines spread, like these vines up at Mount Carmel Road where we used to live. They spread all over the woods and intertwine with all the poplar trees. And Jesus, through the branches, through the work, you know, and this is not a main point, but just mention it now. The whole idea is that the gospel spreads to the whole earth, right? So the vine accomplishes that. So Jesus said in John 15, he says, I am the vine. And then he says, or he says he's the true vine. And then he says, my father is the husbandman, or you know, the guy who, the farmer. So the father is responsible for this. The father is the farmer. He's the land tiller, the however you want to excuse me, however you want to translate that. The Greek is a land tiller. He's the one who's taking care of the land. Excuse me, sorry. In Isaiah chapter 5, and this is, I could have read this before, but I'll save it for now. Isaiah chapter 5, beginning in verse 1. This will give you an example of the outlay that's involved. Excuse me, here's another example of where the prophets use a vine or a vineyard as a symbol for God's people. In this case, it would be Judah and Israel. But I think, you know, it applies to the church. We say that by analogy applies to the church also. Now I will sing, Isaiah 5, verse 1, to my well-beloved, a song of my beloved touching his vineyard. My well-beloved has a vineyard in a very fruitful hill, and he fenced it, and he gathered out the stones thereof, and he planted it with choicest vine, and he built a tower in the midst of it, and he also made a wine press therein, and he looked that it should bring forth grapes, and it brought forth wild grapes. So here we have a problem. You know, that's, I'm not getting into that, but the point here that I wanted to show is that there's a lot of work involved. You didn't just plant some grapes. You had to put a fence around it. You had to take care of the soil. You put this tower in, and you also built the wine press there, which was quite an investment. Because you don't want to have to transport the grapes somewhere else and risk them spoiling or getting damaged. So if you had a substantial wine press, a substantial vineyard, it involved having a wine press right there on site. So there's a lot of outlay, a lot of investment here. If I can continue on, what more could I have done to my vineyard that I haven't done? You know, that it would bring forth grapes. You know, I did everything I could. I did what you're supposed to do when you have a vineyard. It's the way Isaiah writes it. And there's a lot. There's a lot involved. And that's why it's a symbol of prosperity and peace and security, because there's so much involved, and it's so there's so much investment, so much money involved and time involved, that you wouldn't bother building a vineyard unless you knew that you were secure. So that's why it became a symbol for security and prosperity. we don't need to turn there, but Leviticus 19 and verses 23, 24, 25, it talks about planting a vineyard. And back then they were not to take a fruit off of it for 3 years. And then the fourth year, whatever fruit was there was a first fruit given to God and given to the priests. So it was the fifth year. If you went to the trouble to do all this that we just described in Isaiah chapter 5, if you had the time and if you had the money, you had the resources to create this, you had to wait 5 years before you got a crop. That's why it's a picture of security. And there, you know, you think twice about investing in a crop if you're not going to get any return for 5 years. We've traveled to St. Lucia quite a few times, and one of our friends down there is he was a minister, or not a minister, it's the wrong word. He was in the government, and he worked in the agriculture ministry. He wasn't the Ministry of Agriculture, though. And he's retired, but he still works as a consultant. And down there, they have, you know, bananas is one of the main crops. And banana crop takes about a year, which really surprised me. You know, they plant these bananas, and in a year, you've got more bananas. And they're all the same, by the way. Everybody realize that? There's only like one kind of banana in the world for the most part. And there's currently some kind of a pest that's attacking them. If they don't figure out how to beat that pest, it'll be, yes, we have no bananas, until they develop a new strain that can do it. So bananas are clones. Every plant is a clone of every other plant, at least where they are grown as a crop for distribution. Anyway, it takes less than a year and you get a crop. But it's not a terribly a valuable crop. So our friend down there, Anthony's, along with his whole department down there, trying to get the growers and the people that own the land to grow cocoa for chocolate. But guess what? It's time intensive, costs more money, and you don't get a crop for like, I forget, is it 3, 4, 5 years? It's a while. You don't get a crop because the bush has to grow. And so they're used to making not a whole lot of money, but getting it in less than a year from their investment. And when the government tries to tell them, look, you can make more money, you have more security, a better market, blah, 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 because their bananas, by the way, are not the same as our bananas. They grow squatter. But in any event, and they only get to sell them to, like, Britain. Nobody else buys them. When they try to get them to go to something that could be more profitable for them, they won't do it because the outlay is more and they have to wait longer for the return. So again, when you think about a vineyard, it's the same principle. You know you're going to have to wait on your return, so you think twice about doing it and when you're going to do it. Make sure that you feel secure. I'm not going to have to, you know, pull up roots and flee the Philistines in a few years, you know, or whatever it is. You think, well, is there security here? And that's why the reign of Solomon was seen as a secure time, because they had peace. You know, he was powerful, and the neighbors were all trading partners rather than enemies for the reign of Solomon, because David had subdued all the enemies. So back to vines and husbandmen. Husbandmen has a lot of work to do to get a vineyard going and have to wait on the return for a while. So we've got, and I guess let's see, I'm going to talk. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to develop the analogy, give you a lot of details. We'll talk about pruning when we get there, but we've got a ways to go. In Mark chapter 12, Mark chapter 12, starting in verse 1. It says he spoke in parables, and it says, a certain man planted a vineyard, and he set a hedge about it. All right, you got to have some kind of a fence or hedge. He digged a place for the wine press. He built a tower, and he let it out to husbandmen and went into a far country. So I could read the whole parable, and I'm not going to do that. The point is the husbandmen were delegated. In other words, somebody owned it, but then there was a delegation of the responsibility, and God does the same thing. There are people, you know, all of us in one way or another, we're servants, we're ministers in church, right? And we serve each other. So that the husbandman part, God is the husbandman, but he delegates responsibility to everybody in the congregation to help the vineyard to bear fruit. He doesn't take all that, he has the responsibility, but he doesn't do all the work himself. He delegates that. And you can read the whole parable there if you'd like. And then the next one, well, in Matthew chapter 13, you have, and I won't turn there either, the parable of the sower. You know, that there's work that's done. It doesn't always bear good fruit. And there's various reasons for that. But the point is that God is pictured as the sower. He's pictured as the husbandman. He's pictured as somebody who's actively involved in an enterprise that is supposed to bear fruit. He's not in it for, you know, it's not a hobby. He's not a gentleman farmer that's not looking to make any money. We just have a tax write-off. It's not like that. He's looking for fruit. That's what the Bible's teaching us, that God is involved, and he's actively involved, and he's looking for fruit. Okay, we already looked at 1 Corinthians 3:9. That's where You know, it talks about tillage. You know, the garden involved. The good husbandman waters his vine. That's one of the things he does. You can read that in Isaiah. Excuse me. What is the reward? What does a husbandman want? Well, the answer is pretty obvious, and that's what it says in John 15 again, verse 8. It says, "Herein is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit, and so shall you be my disciples." So that's what a husbandman wants. He wants fruit. So we have a vine. We have a husbandman. And then in John chapter 15, where we were, it says, it talks about branches without identifying who the branches are. But then in verse 5, it says, "I am the vine, you are the branches." So the next component of this analogy is branches. And guess what? We are the branches. That's where we come in. And it describes the branches. And again, I'll reread this. I'll change the language just a little bit. I'm reading again from the King James. "Every branch in me that bears fruit," verse 2, "that doesn't bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch in me that does bear fruit, he prunes it, that it may bring forth more fruit." And then in verse 4, he says, you know, "Live in me, be connected to me, and I in you. The branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, and neither can you unless you abide in me." So the branch, obviously, has to be connected to the vine. If you sever that branch, there's not going to be any fruit on that branch, right? Obviously. I gave this a message like this many years ago, and up in the mountains in Maryland, and I stressed the point in the whole sermon. I thought I was stressing the point that the branches must be connected. Sorry. Let's see. That's not connected. All right. Now we'll connect that one again. The branches must be connected. And the guy that gets up and gives the closing prayer made the point that that connections were between the people. I'm saying they have to be connected to the vine. We have to be connected to Christ, and that's what's critical. And he summarized it by saying we all had to be connected to each other. So I guess right over his head. But I don't want that to happen to you. All right, we need to be connected to the vine. That doesn't mean we can't be involved with each other, but we need to be connected to the vine. If you got the closing prayer, you know. I was really disappointed. I thought, did I do that bad of a job of transmitting my thought here? Because I specifically said, I can remember, I said, you know, if you're not connected to the vine, anybody know of a vine that's not connected, doesn't seem to be connected to a trunk? Can you think of one? What? It'll fall. Well, can you think of a particular vine like that? Maybe. I think it's a vine. I don't know if it's actually, vine is the wrong word. Spanish moss down south.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That doesn't connect to the ground, does it? It just kind of grows, you know, I don't know how it happens. I never studied it.
It's a
sucklet.
Huh? It's a sucklet.
Oh, it gets its
energy from whatever it.
From the trees that it's on? Oh, okay, okay. So it's not connected to a trunk down in the ground. No, that's not what this analogy is about. This analogy is about something that's connected firmly to the ground, and all the branches, in order to bear fruit, are connected to it, connected to that trunk. And that's important. Now, this is something I don't know when I learned it. Something about the time that I guess we tried to grow some grapes on our own. Did we have some grapes? Yeah, maybe I had to. So I started reading about grapes, and those of you that have grapes already know this. And this is why it's such a great analogy. When you prune a grapevine, how much of it do you prune? More than you don't prune, right?
Oh, yeah, you don't prune.
There's hardly anything left. That was really a surprise. I know, I'm not used to that.
I didn't sell, and I didn't get much grapes. You have to prune really hard in order to get a bunch of grapes.
You got to prune a lot. So when Jesus used this analogy of a grapevine and pruning, he wasn't. It's not like you're trying to shape your little tree in your front yard and you nip a little bit off here and you lip a little bit off here and you nip a little bit off here. And I remember asking my dad, because my dad was into into trees, and my brothers inherited that. I said, "Dad," I said, when do you prune?" He said, when the shears are sharp. That's what was his answer, when the shears are sharp. You know, just do it, you know. But that's what was hard for me, and I never understood. That when we had these grapes, I was like, oh, wow, I got growth. But in order to maintain them properly, I was supposed to cut it out all off. Or not all of it. So what do? You leave something for next year's branches, right? You got to leave a little nut, whatever it's called. There's a name for it. I forget what it's called. You leave something for next year's branches, and you also have to have a branch that you leave there that's going to have the fruit on it for this year. You need a fruit for this year, but you also need to leave the beginning of the branch you're going to need. The branches you're going to need for next year. And you don't need a lot of branches. That's the thing. If you ever go to a winery, or I don't know how you have yours, but you might have some wires here, and you got one out here, one out here. You don't have lots and lots of branches. And the way to have a good crop is you prune more than you leave. Now, why does that matter? Well, it matters because that's the analogy that Jesus chose. And there's a whole lot we can gather from that, and we'll get there in a bit. I don't want to get there yet, I don't think. So the branches, they support this year's growth. There are branches that you need to leave apart there to grow for next year's branches. The branches also, like the vine, convey the water and nutrients to the leaves. And they are a place for the leaves to grow. And the leaves are what give you the energy and the food for the plant, for the photosynthesis. The branches are, they're... vine, the whole thing about a vine is it sends out, what do they call it, tendrils, the things that go grab onto stuff so that the vine can spread where it wants to spread. It's a place for those to grow as well. But the trunk is not where the fruit grows. Fruit grows out on the branches. So God's got this project on earth. It's called a kingdom project, whatever you want to call it, spreading the gospels or whatever. God is doing things. God is developing a people. He's preparing people to rule in his kingdom. He's got all these things going. And the fruit that is born is in you and me because we are the branches. He's not interested in bearing the fruit himself. He could do perfectly well at that, I guess, if he wanted to. But that's not what he's doing. The analogy is it's a vine, and the fruit production is going on out on the branches, and the reality is in order for that to happen, there's more that gets pruned away than what you leave. Now, that may sound all okay in theory, but what does that mean about you and me? Your God has said, "All right, Brian, I want you to be a branch." That sounds good. I'm there. I'm your man. I'm not saying I would say that. You know what I mean. Sounds good so far. All right, here's the deal. What do you think you are? You're this, 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 and this. Guess what? 80% of that we're going to prune away because that's not, we don't need that, we don't want it. The other 20% we'll work with. That's how we're going to get the fruit. And then you're like, get your hand back down. That's what we've signed up for, like it or not. We signed up for a program where most of us, most of what we are, is going to be pruned away so that what's left will produce more fruit, like you say. I can remember. How many had the Dick and Jane readers? Remember, I forget how far into the year you went, the apple tree where the kid picked all the apples before they were ripe. I forget which kid it was. And that was so horrible. But then they ended up making more money because their apples were bigger, and they got more money for them, or whatever. It was better because the crop was better because they pruned, or called the crop. Living up in the orchard, for 16 years, we saw they did that. They don't do it manually anymore. They spray something that shocks the trees, and they drop a certain number of buds, and so there are less apples. And one year, they didn't say this, but I heard it later. Like, I had a terrible crop one year. I was like, what happened? And later on, I found out that they mixed the at least in our field, we don't own them, but in the mountain where we were, they had mixed the whatever they call that particular treatment where they shock the trees. They mixed it wrong, and it dropped like 90% of the crop or whatever, and it dropped a tremendous amount. They had very, very small, but it's just because they messed the dosage up and shock it too much. But the point there is well taken. You have to prune even some of the fruit in order for the rest of the fruit to be worthwhile. And people, I did a job a couple of years ago for a guy that retired from the FAA, the airplane people. But he had to do with weather and airplanes. And that was his, and he was into wine. So if you're into wine and into grapes, you have to be into weather. So it was right up his alley, and he bought this property. It was facing the right direction and blah, And he's got a winery now. And I built the winery in his basement. To talk to this guy about grapes, I mean, it's more than you ever want to know about grapes. But he knows it, and that's what people that make good wine have to do. They have to know their grapes, and they have to know the land. They have to know how it works, and they have to know how to prune. And he would get people come up and help him prune. They have pruning parties, and they'd have, well, they didn't do it with their toes, but they'd have grape squishing parties too and all kinds of things. But because it was more than he could do by himself, and he didn't have employees, so he'd invite people to come up. But they would have to. He'd have to make sure that the right number of clusters were on the vines, and the number that they could take, the number that you still left. You had to have enough leaves, because if you don't have the right number of leaves, you don't have enough food to make the grapes. So it's a real science to it all. Now, I guess it's an art and a science in a way. And some people are very good at that. Those are the people that, employed in all the wineries around the world. So bearing fruit requires a husbandman that knows what they're doing to the branches. And God, of course, knows what he's doing. And one of those things he's doing is he's pruning. And that's where I want to get to. So got to move on, or I won't. It says in John 15, again and again, we have to abide in the, what's abide mean? It means live, be connected, right? We have to be connected to the vine. That's the only way we're going to produce fruit. We have to be connected to the vine. We have to be connected. Who's the vine? Jesus, right? You have to be connected to Jesus. That's how the fruit is born in your life. That's how the fruit is born in my life. Jesus said you want to know something about somebody. He says, by their fruits you shall know them. That's talking about a real connection. You're not going to have real fruit unless you're really connected to the vine. That's why he said, focus on the fruit. Because people can blow a lot of smoke, right? You can talk a good talk. But unless you're walking the good walk, you're not going to have the good fruit. So Jesus said, focus on the fruit. Don't worry about all the smoke and mirrors. Because that doesn't mean anything. Look for the fruit. And if there's fruit, if the fruit is good, you're connected to that person's connected to the tree, to the vine. If the fruit's not good, might be missing a connection there. There is a way to be connected, but maybe in appearance. You'd be a hanger-on. In fact, the Bible talks about that. It talks about the farmer that sows seed, and there's tares mixed in with the wheat, and they let them grow to maturity. So there's a mixture. Some people can look good and look like they blend in. Look at the fruit. Look at the fruit. It's not all about appearance. So in order to be connected, you have to be literally connected, not just in the neighborhood, not just looking good and talking, the talk. You can be literally connected, and you have to stay connected. That's the abiding part. Abide, stay, live. So you're connected and you stay connected. And that will result in fruit. And by staying connected, it's a whole other subject, but your obedience to what Jesus says, if you're connected to the vine, you're going to do what the vine directs you to do, the signals that the vine gives. And I don't need to cover all those things. I guess, if any of you have dealt with these fox grapes, how do you get rid of a vine that has infested a tree that's crown, that's 50, 60 feet, 70 feet? I had some really tall poplars. Yeah, you cut them off at the bottom, and they die. Because I'd get down and just play with my tractor, right? I had this big old tractor, so I'd get the bucket up there, and I'd somehow get the vine wrapped around the bucket, and then I'd run one of the tires maybe under on the vine, so I could really yank on this thing, and I could almost turn the tractor over, because those vines are connected. Now they're saying they're connected to the ground. Now but they're all intertwined up top. They're hard to bring down. Now some of them I'd pull down. That was fun. You could pull down a vine, but most of them I couldn't pull them down. So what'd I do? Cut them off at the bottom, and they're easier to pull off once they die. Even some of them, they'd had too many years up there, and I still couldn't pull them down even after they died. But they have to. If a vine is not connected, it dies. So even though you got this thing that's impressive, and taking over the crown of a tree, all you have to do cut the bottom. It's done. It's over. If you're severed, and what did Jesus say? He said, "He that abides in me and I in him, the same brings forth much fruit. For without me," and you could translate that as severed from me, cut off from me, "you can accomplish nothing." So once you're cut off from the vine, you're on your own, just like those fox grapes. So we have a vine, we have a husband, we have branches, and then we have... what happens to those branches? They get pruned. And that's what we've signed up for, whether we like to think about it or not. We're going to be pruned because we're the branches. The church as a whole is composed of branches, so the church is going to be pruned. You cut back to, as we said, you cut back to the trunk every season except for, one year's worth of what's going to provide the fruit and the beginnings, the stubs of the branches for the following year. So most everything's cut away. And that's kind of amazing. And when I first learned that, it surprised me. Because to me, pruning was cutting off the little bits you didn't want. You had a tree, and this tree's starting to grow in front of the kitchen window, so you cut that branch off. To me, pruning did not mean cutting more away than what you leave. But when it comes to grapes, that's what it does mean. And that was an interesting discovery for me. In Romans chapter 7, in verse 18, Paul's talking about himself. And we're breaking into a thought, but this makes the point. "I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwells no good thing, for to will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good, I don't know." I can't find. He's saying, there's nothing good in me, in my flesh. So guess what? The husbandman knows that about you and about me. And he's got a plan for getting rid of that. He's going to prune it. Is that pleasant? No. Not usually. We usually learn the hard way, don't we? I've been amazed in my own life, and in the life of those, some close to me and around me, how many times, this is a whole other message, but I'll share a little bit of it. The old expression that when you point a finger at somebody, you have three fingers pointing back at you? Isn't that true, though? That I've noticed the things that irritate me the most are, when I think about it long enough, or when God puts my nose in it in such a way, I realize, that's how I am. I don't like it when it's in other people, but that's me. It's kind of looking in a mirror. You don't realize that at first. And I don't know if you've experienced that. You probably have. God has to get rid of that stuff. And that's the pruning. That's the pruning. Because that's the part of you that's not going to bear good fruit. So he has to get rid of it. It says he's going to get rid of the part that doesn't bear good fruit. It's going to be burned. When you by the way, those of you that have grapes know, you have to think about what you cut off and what you don't. You can't just go in there, I don't like it. Now, maybe you do after you've done it for a lot of years and you kind of know what you need to do. But at first, you actually need to think about it. You know, think which branches are going to be good for next year? Which branches are going to be good for the fruit this year? How you know, what do I cut off and what do I not cut off? And it requires some knowledge and it requires some experience and it requires a love for the fruit. You know, you want what's going to be the outcome. And guess what? God's the same way. God's the same way. He's, you know, he's got a plan for you and he's got a plan for me. And he knows what parts he has to prune off and he knows what parts he doesn't need to prune. Well, or does he? We'll get there in a minute. I don't want to say that way. But we can, if we're not careful, tend to look at pruning as a correction. God correcting me. Well, a grapevine doesn't need to be corrected. It hasn't done anything wrong. You see? So just because we are human and God needs to prune us because of, you know, certain things about the way we are, doesn't mean necessarily that we are, yes, we're sinners because we're human. But my point is, a pruning is not necessarily correction. Pruning is just what needs to happen in order to produce good fruit. In fact, what's it say back in John 15 again? It says, every branch that bears fruit, he purges it that it may bring forth more fruit. So guess what? They say, I'm doing pretty well. I've done this and I've done that. And, you know, I've produced some fruit for the husbandman. And you feel, I'm exaggerating here, you know, you feel a little bit good about yourself maybe. And that's fine. Realize that Jesus has said ahead of time, if you are producing fruit, he'll prune you so that you produce more fruit. That's what a husbandman does. God will prune you so that you produce more fruit than you already do. So you can't coast on your laurel, rest on your laurels. That's not the way it works. God is looking for more, not because he's greedy, but because he wants his whole process. What he's doing is producing good fruit. That's what he's all about. And it's a regular occurrence. You have to prune your grapevines every year. At least, I mean, maybe more than once a year. I don't know how often you do it, but you definitely one big one, big time. And maybe another time when the fruit first comes out. So it's a regular occurrence. It's not like, oh, no, I did something wrong. God's pruning me. No, he's going to prune you. He's going to prune you. So you can't count on an easy life. That'd be nice, but that's not the way it is. And sometimes we get it's easy to get in a frame of mind that say, I got this book here, and it tells me that God cares for me, and God's going to do good things for me, and that's all very true. And so therefore we can get into a certain mindset that God is somehow or another obligated to fix our problems because he loves us and he's got these promises. And so therefore he's got to take care of us and just and make our lives easy. When the Bible doesn't say that at all. Yeah, Paul wishes that one of the apostles wishes that the people receiving his letter are in good health or whatever. And that's good. But the reality is we're going to suffer a certain amount. We're going to experience some pruning because that's just the way it works. And Jesus has predicted that in advance. And, life is not a rose garden, as they say. And it's not intended to be. It never was. So pruning is inevitable. If there's parts of you that don't suit the end game that God has in mind for you, God's going to prune them away. And if there are parts of you that are fitting into what God wants, he's going to prune them so that they are more productive. So you can't avoid the pruning. It's going to happen anyway, either way. Why is it? Because the husbandman cares for you. He's invested a lot in you. He's built the hedge around you. He's done all these things because he expects a crop. He expects fruit. And that's what we're here for. If you're not pruned, you're a wild vine. You're a fox grape in my woods. Not any good to anybody. Just cluttering the tree up. So if you're planted by God, which you are, you will be pruned because God takes care of what he plants. I might leave some of this out. There are different reasons why you can prune. That's not really important, I guess. But one of the things that we already mentioned is it prevents overcropping too. If you get going, if we're going in too many directions at the same time, the quality will, you might have a lot of quantity, but your quality lessens, right? You can only do so much. we can only focus on so much at a time. So we need to be concerned about quality. There are various verses that address that. One of them's in 1 Samuel 15:22. That's where Saul is. He doesn't listen to God, and Samuel gets on his case. He says, "Does God care about the offerings and so forth?" In other words, and there are other verses, and you can write these down. I won't turn them. Isaiah 1, verses 11 to 17, and Isaiah 29, and verse 13 are examples where God says, "You know, you're doing all these things, but I can't even stand them." He said, "You're holy day. You're new moons, and you're I'm done with that. I can't stand it. Why? Because his people were being disobedient. His people had wrong approaches, wrong attitudes. They weren't taking care of the fatherless and the widow and the weak among them, and so forth. There were things that were negative, and just because they were going through the motions of being quote unquote obedient, God says again in those three verses, in 1 Samuel and in Isaiah, he says, you know, that doesn't count for anything. All this stuff, you know, you might check a lot of boxes. You might think you're doing a lot of good. But if you're not doing it for the right reasons, the right motivation, and if you're not taking care of people and you're not showing love and all of that, I don't really care. In other words, that obedience doesn't count for anything if at the same time we are, as it says in Isaiah 58, where it talks about the fast that God commends. You know, you do a fast. That's supposedly a good thing. But then at the same time, you're extortionist and you take advantage of people and all this kind of stuff. So I don't really care about what you're saying is the obedient part when in your life you're not living what I'm trying to get you to live. So it's the quantity is not as important as the quality, I think, is what God's telling us. I don't care how much you're doing if you're not doing it right or doing it well. There's no such thing as quick growth, you know, even with plants. As you mentioned, you know, when you didn't prune, your crops didn't do very well. You don't get the good the good bunches of grapes that you would get otherwise. You have to even, as we mentioned, you have to even prune the fruit. Sometimes you can have too much fruit. As I said, the quality's not there. You'd have to have the right ratio between the amount of wood that is supporting all this and how much of the fruit did you let grow. So remember, the pruning, this is one of the reasons I wanted to bring this. It's just to remember and have a, I hope it's somewhat encouraging, to realize that when you feel like you're being pruned, that might be unpleasant, but don't take it as correction. It's not necessarily correction. Could be. But the point is, God's going to prune you because he loves you and because he's looking for fruit. And it's okay. It's okay. It's part of the Christian life. And so you're not going to get every, you know, we want the easy life. We want God to do this and that for us and solve every problem and fix everything, every situation we get into. And wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't everybody want to be a Christian? And because it would be an easy path and an easy existence. It's not like that, is it? It's not like that. The Christian path is one that involves pruning, and sometimes it's very unpleasant. But it's not correction. You don't have to feel bad about yourself because it's happening to you. And it can even happen to us as a church, and it has. It has. And I don't need to go through that in detail either because we, as a collective body of people, we have been pruned and chastened in different ways to produce more fruit. So, what do we take away from this parable today? about the vine and the husbandman and the branches. If you remember one thing, go back and tell my friend, lives in California now, I think, be connected to the vine. Always. Not just by appearances, but actually connected to the vine. Never lose that connection. Don't be a hanger-on. Don't be a, you know, oh, I'm going to tape myself to the branch here. You know, be connected to the branch. Don't ever let go of that connection. I'm going to turn to another verse before I give the second takeaway, and that's James chapter 1 and verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into different trials, knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience. And let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, not wanting anything. But if you lack wisdom, ask God. God will give to you. So, you know, count it all joy, that type of thing. The point that James is making, and it's made in other places, is to realize that pruning is part of the process. Respond positively to pruning, even though it may be uncomfortable, even though it may be a little bit disquieting sometimes, because the pruning involves, you get used to that branch, that part of that branch, that leaf. Oh, I like that leaf there. I've had that leaf. Well, no, God doesn't want it there. And that might be uncomfortable. But realize that God's doing that for an overall purpose of producing more fruit for the kingdom and producing more fruit in your life. So learn to and try to respond positively to this process of pruning. We can, you know, it says be like Christ. Now, Jesus describes himself as the vine. He's a conduit, right? He's a conduit for water, for nutrients from the ground. So are the branches. They're much smaller conduits, but they're conduits. And in that sense, we can imitate Christ. We can be a conduit. We can be a pathway for the nutrients, for the things that the fruit needs. And what does that mean? That means letting God work through us through the Spirit, be a conduit for what he's doing. Instead of, we don't have to initiate things. We don't have to be so smart that we dream up everything. Sometimes all we have to do, and a lot of times, really what we need to be doing, is not coming up with the brilliant ideas ourselves as much as being a conduit for what God is already doing, letting God work through us. Now here's the hardest one. Trust God to take care of his vineyard. And speaking from my own personal experience, that's the hardest part. We want to get in there, work ourselves. Talking about the vineyard in a larger context of the church as a whole, we want to involve ourselves in certain ways there that, at least in my case, in my experience, have not been productive. Excuse me. And finally, bear fruit. We're here to bear fruit. That's why we've been put on earth. That's why God has called us. He's got a project that involves fruit, and you and I are the ones that are bearing that. He doesn't do it himself. He does it through the branches, through the vine, his son, and through the branches, which are us. So we have an important role to play. We are the branches. John 15. I am the true vine. My Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that bears fruit, or bears not fruit, he mentions that first, sorry, he takes away. All right? The parts of you that are not productive, he's going to take away. He'll take care of that. Yield to that process. Help in the process. Every branch that does bear fruit, he purges it, that it might bring forth more fruit. That's the part that's maybe we're less ready to accept. That when we do well, that God's going to expect more, and he's going to prune us so that he can get more. Verse 4, abide in me and I in you. You know, be connected. branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine. So we cannot produce fruit unless we're connected to the vine. We're the branches, it says in verse 5. And if we're connected, connected to the vine, we can bear much fruit. And no fruit if we're not connected. If a man doesn't abide in me, he's cast forth as a branch and withered, and men gather them up and cast them in the fire and they are burned. If you abide in me, and my words abide in you, so do we have to not just be connected to the vine, but do what the vine says, do what Jesus said. And we've had a long series here in the congregation here from Hugh of all the different things that Jesus said and did in his life that we are to model ourselves after. You shall ask what you will, and it shall be done for you. Herein is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit. So shall you be my disciples.